Welcome to Add This to Your List. This is a weekly podcast where we tell you things to add and things not to add. Mm-hmm. And I am Fumi Samano, one of your co-hosts, and I'm joined by Mark J. Parker.
Hey.
Hey, Boo.
Hey, Boo.
And we're not joined by Tom Chuba.
Wah, wah.
Tom could not join us this episode because he is boggled down and for some serious homework from the J.O.B.
Ugh, he's got like, a 76 pages to read?
Yeah, it's pretty intense. And when your job gives you money to pay your bills, you got to do it, right?
Yeah, so, I was literally about to say, you can't pay me to read a 76-page thing, but then it's like, oh, actually,
they are.
Yeah, it's part of the duties. So he's reading while we're playing. He's doing our homework for us.
But he is going to pop in and out into today's episode. Yep. We're going to break down some Hollywood headlines and news. Mm-hmm. What do we call that? Why do I always blank out?
Oh, boom. Housekeeping and headlines. Although there's really no housekeeping.
There is no housekeeping. So we're going to break down some headlines and we'll get into our list. Tom did share with us what's on his list for this week, which I'll let him tell you. Mm-hmm. And then he's got this awesome, amazing interview with the editor of the upcoming film Harriet that's going to be going nationwide on November 1st. We're so, so excited about it. So he's going to be speaking with Wyatt Smith. So we're really excited about that. And that'll be later on in the episode.
Yeah, very exciting because I'm sure that movie, it stars Cynthia Erivo.
Yes.
And I think Janelle Monáe. I'm sure it's going to be definitely part of the awards conversation. So we're lucky to have that little sit-down interview. Yeah, that'll be fun. All about editing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, let's get into some headlines first. Mm-hmm. Mark, I'm going to let you go first. Oh, well, I'm going to go first, actually.
Yeah, you
this
take
headline
away.
Is huge.
I know. It's terrible, but let's get into it.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. So, Rohan Farrow, we all know that he's the one who kind of blew the lid. Not kind of. He did. He blew the lid off of Harvey Weinstein and really set in motion this Me Too movement for women who have said they've had enough, really. Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I just saw him the other day on the street. I literally just saw Ronan Farrow
in
like workout clothes, just like walking by. And I'm like, oh my God, you are like brilliant. And here you are just walking by. We made eye contact.
Living life.
Yeah. So, but yeah, he's done major things and now he's about to come out with a new book.
He really is. So this book is coming out. It's not out yet, but it will be out next week.
Mm-hmm. Just a few days, right?
In just a few days. I already pre-ordered it because, you know, I am ready.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be huge. Let me borrow that, please, when you're done, okay?
I actually can. I can share it with you. I absolutely can.
Good.
It is Catch and Kill, Lies, Spies, and a Conspiracy to Protect Predators.
Yes.
It's coming out nationwide October 15th, and it really is kind of like this major expose on what led up to the Harvey Weinstein blowing the lid off of that. And what he says, allegedly, we're saying allegedly here because there are two sides to every story,
right?
That NBC was basically trying to stop him from doing this hit piece on Harvey Weinstein because the president of NBC News and Andy Lack, the chairman of NBC, basically were buddy-buddy with Harvey Weinstein. And Harvey Weinstein had set out this whole thing to, like, take Rohan Farrow down. Like, take him down. And they kind of were helping him, I guess, to do so, to stop him from this news.
Well, it's funny because you forget that, you know, Weinstein had such a close connection with Bravo and all that. And Bravo is owned by NBC. So, all these guys were buddy-buddy with Weinstein, which is crazy, because also it's like news people that shouldn't be buddy-buddy with anyone, right? You should be unbiased.
Totally.
So yeah, when Ronan Farrow's doing all this, it's like they were, it's interesting. The article made it seem like they weren't outright saying no, but they were gently like trying to like push him
in
a different
direction. It was a
manipulation.
It was a subtle manipulation to get him not to really move forward with the story. But what really kind of set everything going, which is what made this trending on Twitter and everybody talking about it in the news and even to the Today Show mentioned it, was we found out what led to Matt Lauer's firing.
Right.
And that was the rape, mm-hmm. the graphic assault of a producer, mm-hmm. as she claims, that happened at the Sochi Olympics in 2014 or 2016.
I forget. I know. When was Matt Lauer was fired in 2017, right?
So it was 2014.
Yeah.
I believe was when the assault occurred, the alleged assault occurred. And apparently that was kept hidden by a lot of people. A lot of people were not aware, understandably, a lot of people were not aware of the specifics and the details of what led to Matt Lauer's firing. They just thought it was inappropriate behavior. But come to find out, because of the release and an expert from this book, Catch and Kill, we found out that it was actually rape.
Yes.
And so this is, as I'm sure you can imagine, very jarring for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
This poor woman is our age. She could have literally been an intern with us.
Wow.
When we were interns, and because she had basically apparently been working at NBC for most of her career. Mm-hmm. And it is pretty shocking. Shocking, to say the least.
Apparently she was working with Meredith Vieira, who I guess was mm-hmm. brought back, right, mm-hmm. to cover some of that with Matt. Yep. And they all were having drinks at the bar, I guess, right? That's, I guess, how the story goes.
That's how it goes.
And after a few, you know, shots and everything, she found herself in Matt's room. And
Matt's room, yeah. Well, she got called up to them twice. So apparently he jokingly took her press credentials. Granted, she needed them because she needed to go to work the next day.
It was a literal trap. Yeah.
And then got the press credentials, went away. He called her back. And the second time he called her back is when the alleged assault occurred. So,
yeah.
Our hearts go out to this woman and also people at NBC. I can't imagine what it must feel like to work with someone who you thought you knew, and maybe there were issues there, but to know that they committed such a horrific crime, allegedly, it's pretty jarring.
It's like right out of a movie. Like literally, this scene was in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Like
totally,
a man saying, "Do you like anal sex?" and then just doing it without any sort of lubrication, warm up, anything, and I mean, absolutely terrible. She said she bled for days.
Yeah.
And then what happened to him? Did she quit soon after, or was she there for a while?
No, so she actually was there for a while and then started a consensual relationship with Matt Lauer. They started to have sex. They started to date.
Oh,
she said that it was transactional. She did it because she was scared for what would happen with her career if she didn't. And I don't know the specifics of what led her to finally tell Meredith Vieira what happened, but it was after she told Meredith Vieira what happened, and Meredith Vieira urged her to go to HR at NBC is when she finally did.
Yeah.
But the kicker here is apparently NBC reported on this news very differently than ABC and CBS did, and NBC left out some details that apparently ABC and CBS let viewers know.
And so, that was just like this week, like reporting this story. Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
Like yesterday, like as earlier this week. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
God.
We'll see what happens with this. I don't think it's going to go away like some people may want it to.
Oh yeah. And it should not. And then you know what? It's only going to keep being on everyone's minds, of course, as it should, because in just a couple short months, Weinstein, I think, goes on trial in like January. So this Matt Lauer will still be brought up and all this stuff, and Ronan Farrow. So yeah, it's really terrible.
It's awful.
Really awful.
But we have to segue into positive news for women, because the result of all of this with Me Too has led to what I think is fantastic news, which is a lot more women in power across executives, producing, agents, managers. Variety released their Women Impact Report of 2019, and it is a breath of fresh air, to say the least.
Yes.
We've got the president of Alternative and Reality at NBC, Meredith Eyre, and I apologize if I'm saying her last name wrong. We've got Victoria Alonso, who's the executive VP of production at Marvel Studios. Y'all know how I love my Marvel, and Marvel is a boys club, so I love to see some women in power and in executive suites over there.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Ali Wong, who wrote Always Be My Maybe.
Yep, we talked about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Patricia Arquette, we know she's a favorite of the podcast, especially of Mark's.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just got some other president of music at Sony Pictures. We've got the president of Sony Pictures Animation. Women, Ava DuVernay, a powerful executive and producer and writer and director. And
one
so
that caught
I,
one woman that caught my eye quickly was Carrie Burke, who's now the new president of ABC Entertainment post merger with Fox. And I thought this was so interesting. She is, because I've heard her name a lot at work, of course. I thought this was cool that her passion is the Executive Incubator Program, which is a pipeline for next gen network executives that kicks off apparently this month. Quoted, "We want to have people in positions of power and who create the shows that accurately reflect our audience." So that's awesome. Let's see what happens.
That is amazing. Yeah. And you know what? When you have women in position of power and positions of being able to have a say-so, you diminish the amount of what we're seeing is happening so much in workplaces, which is just is abuse and assault. And so we want to just continue to force and push and make sure that we continue to have women in positions of power and also women of color in positions of power. This is all around different genders, genres, sexual orientations. Let's have our workplace and the bosses at the workplace, the C-suites, let's make sure that they reflect what we see out in the world.
You know what's so funny whenever I hear C-suites now? Because I guess maybe I heard it, but I just didn't know what that was or just ignored it. I literally didn't know what C-suites was until like you and Tom told me. Like Tom was like, the C-suites. And do you remember I was like, what are these C-suites? What is that? That just goes to show how like oblivious I am with all this capitalistic bullshit. but you guys are like, Mark, that's like the important people. I'm like, oh, okay, C-suites. Okay, good to know. I was like, what about A&D?
It's a very corporate lingo.
Yeah, right. It's so corporate. I know. But also some people that aren't so corporate that are on that list. We're talking about the women of Fleabag, the women of Killing Eve.
Yes.
So it's great to also see the women from Black Panther who did like costumes and production design. Mm-hmm. So it's cool to also see some really good creative people that are powerful as well.
Absolutely.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Mark, what do you got? I know you have
some
stuff.
Yeah, let's chat about, speaking of a powerful woman that I think we all, at least the three of us, love. I know maybe she can be a little grating, I guess, at times, but I love her and always have. Big news today, as of this recording, is Drew Barrymore. She is now doing a daytime talk show for CBS.
She is.
This
is
very interesting. And now it makes
sense. I
know,
right?
Because earlier this year, you might remember, she was on a sort of fun show, even though we sort of have seen that all before. She was on a show with RuPaul and Faith Hill and James Corden on CBS called, I want to say it was like The World's Best. Do you remember that? Like,
yep.
I think
it
came on
a
after the Super Bowl,
show, right?
Yeah, it was like a talent. It was like America's Got Talent, right? But she was super cute on it, and so I thought, well, that's interesting. Now she's working with CBS. What does that mean? What could be next? And the next thing is now she'll be hosting her own daytime talk show. Now I think she's perfect for a daytime talk show, right? I feel like she is so naturally likable. She's got a lot of friends.
Absolutely.
She's got a lot to say. I just think this is sort of an interesting turn in her career.
For her.
I don't think it's a bad turn. But it's interesting, right? I mean, now she'll be, you know, less of an actress and more just of a personality. But I mean, she already kind of was a personality, right?
I'm intrigued to see how this goes because she is a working actress. And I assume that she doesn't want to stop doing that. But having a talk show takes a lot of your time. I mean, you're talking about 5 days a week show, 10 months out of the year, sometimes 11 months out of the year.
Right.
So I can only imagine, you know, what's gonna happen here. So we'll see. I mean, I am excited. I love Drew Barrymore. I think she's great. I think she's got the power and connections to really have a super successful show.
And apparently back in 2016, she was eyeing getting a deal with CBS for a daytime talk show, but it sort of fell through. So I guess she's had this idea for a while.
And even though
she is a working actress, she, of course, was in Santa Clarita Diet, which we've talked about a bit. That was a pretty, you know, moderate success. And then we know it was canceled by Netflix. So she definitely has an urge to want to do things. So I think it's cool. I feel like she'll bring the party. I just kind of wish it was like at night. I feel like she could be great at like a late night talk show where she can just like be drinking like a little cocktail, right? Can't you imagine Drew Barrymore on a couch drinking a cocktail with like her girlfriends, you know? So we'll see how it is on daytime on CBS. Fumi and I both have worked for The Talk in different ways. Fumi was actually like full-time. I was a little part-time New York freelancer. But I mean, other than that, I don't know what else daytime CBS has, right?
So they have Dr. Phil, they have The Talk.
Oh, duh.
Phil. Is CBS the only network that still does soaps? No, ABC
ABC still does General Hospital, but CBS still has a few. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you're right. I don't know where this will land in terms of the talk show world, hour and programming, but it'll be interesting to see what she does for sure. Yeah. And I wonder if this will be in New York or LA.
I feel like probably LA. She seems, you know, she's like a Hollywood girl, right? I'd be surprised if she moved to New York.
See, I think it's in New York. I think that's really where they did the pilot. I think.
Wait, is that where she? Oh, that's where she shot the pilot in New York?
I think so. And I feel like every time I saw something about it was like in Page Six, like they were spotted in some New York restaurant. I think she lives in New York now because of her ex-husband.
Interesting. Okay, hey Drew, let me know if you want me on your couch and we can hang. But no, either way, I think it's cool, exciting news. So that's what I got. And then do you want to I'll throw it back to your court.
So I also wanted to shout out, we've got positive and negative news today, but this is a huge positive thing. I want to shout out Tyler Perry for opening the first Black owned studio in Atlanta. I cannot understate how amazing and powerful and wonderful this is. This man took, I think, about 300 acres and created 12 sound stages.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And every sound stage is devoted to a prolific actor, singer, performer of color. You've got like the Oprah Winfrey, the Will Smith, the Della Reese, the Halle Berry sound stage. And this is something where there are offices on here, sound stages, studio editors, everything. You don't even have to ever leave the lot. Back lots with like neighborhoods, like you don't have to leave the lot for anything. And this is so unbelievably amazing. And this happened in Atlanta, Georgia, on an old military base.
Yep.
I believe that Confederate soldiers fought against in the Civil War. So the history of it is fantastic.
Yeah,
big ups
that.
For Tyler Perry. He is say what you will about Tyler Perry your opinions about what you have with him, but you have to give him props for doing something so unbelievably amazing.
Oh, it's huge. It's so exciting. Think of all the jobs this creates.
Absolutely.
I read that this also comes at a time when his deal with OWN, Oprah Winfrey's network, is actually ending. And not that any animosity at all, but now he has a deal with Viacom. And of course, we know Viacom owns BET, I think, MTV, Nickelodeon, Comedy Central. So now
he's churning out content
for
BET.
And now each of those sound stages will be basically for like a different network. I mean, now he has more.
And anybody can rent off of these. So, you know, for those of you who don't, you know, work in television or whatever, it's like you have all these lots and all of these shows get filmed on these lots, but it doesn't matter what network it airs on or who owns the show.
Right.
This Is Us is owned by Fox, but it's filmed on Paramount.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's so anyone can rent space here to film a show.
And any network. It's like daytime TV studios in New York. I remember that when I'm like, oh, wait, we're at the CBS building, but this airs on NBC. It happens all the time.
Same.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So this is such great news. So congratulations to Tyler Perry. That is truly, truly tremendous. And we're really excited for
Very exciting. And he did say that even though I know George's dealing with the heartbeat bill and that's a whole thing of controversy, he said he already, you know, put down hundreds of millions of dollars and he is excited for every 4 years you have the opportunity to change politics. So he's not leaving. He loves Atlanta. So that's nice, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, because I know a lot of studios were leaving Atlanta and all that. So he's there to stay. That's cool.
He is.
And then shall I wrap up our little headline section with one last thing? This is extra exciting for us because it's, you know, well, it's exciting, but I guess it's also competition. But Blumhouse is partnering with iHeartRadio to produce fictional horror podcasts, which I am here for. I am loving this, all of this. So what's happening, guys, is Blumhouse is hiring writers, directors, and actors to do, like, radio plays, to do scripted horror stories that will be, you know, multi-episode podcasts, which I love. If you remember a couple weeks ago on the show, I talked about that theater podcast that I found that I really like various people, you know, do a little short play. It sounds like they're doing this. They're going to do a story much like Homecoming and other podcasts where it's a scripted story over a certain amount of episodes, and Blumhouse and iHeartRadio will partner for it. And then it's the goal is to then basically, unless something goes wrong, to turn these stories into film and TV projects as well, which is very, very interesting. That really is showing you the changing of the tide that podcasts are now kind of like the new version of like books, right? Before it was always what book is coming out that we can turn into a movie or TV show. Now they're doing things where we're literally creating a podcast just to then turn into scripted visual entertainment. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
You know? And the whole chain of business.
I'm excited because I'm a huge fan of Blumhouse. I think they do horror really well. So I think these are really, really interesting. And there's something about not being able to see horror but having to listen to it or read it that makes it almost a little scarier because you have to use your imagination.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you know? Especially if you're driving at night and you're hearing a good story. And I can only imagine there's going to be great sound effects. And they already have their first story. They're working on it. It'll come out in early 2020. So we obviously are super excited. The podcast community is super excited. The horror community is into it. Basically, sign me up. If you need some sort of assistant, let me know. I'll do it because that sounds fun, right? That sounds. I love the idea of like a scary radio play. I love that. I love it. So
it's gonna be
excited. Yeah, that'll be cool. But that's all I got. Oh, real quick, boom, real fast. A little bit of housekeeping, I guess you could say. I watched. If you guys remember last week, Fumi and Tom watched some new. We all watched some new fall TV. Fumi picked. Was it Prodigal Son?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Tom picked Evil. I watched both, everyone. And I have to say.
Oh, what'd you think?
I have to say, I think I actually love Evil. Is that weird?
Really? What part did you love? Did you love the...
I watched the whole first episode, and I think the whole thing is quite good for CBS. Like, I was envisioning just some, like, you know, like typical old thing, but the scary man, whatever. I know you guys were sort of turned off by his Britishness, but maybe because you guys let me know that I was expecting it.
You were prepared for it.
But oh my gosh, beautifully shot. It actually is very creepy. The actor that plays the kind of the prisoner who killed those people is very good. I do know what you mean. The casting is a little weird with the lead actors, but she grew on me. She grew on me. I like it. So what did you... Because I know Tom ended up saying, skip that shit, which now that I've seen it...
I was shocked that he went that far.
I would never say that.
Yeah. I didn't like I didn't like the man, the imaginative person.
Yeah.
But... I did think overall the show was done really well. I thought the storytelling was done really well. I thought that the case was done really well.
Totally.
I agree. The man who was the killer was super kind of creepy and weird. Mm-hmm.
And it was very visceral the way that it was shot and edited. And like when he's killing people, like I was a little freaked out for just regular broadcast.
I think it's super sophisticated in the way that Robert and Michelle King are. Mm-hmm. So I loved that. Mm-hmm. The casting still, I don't know. There's something about the casting that really just kind of like.
And is it just her or is it also him?
No, it's everyone.
It's everyone. Both. Okay. It's yeah. I know the Middle Eastern man who we've seen before and things. I don't know his name, but. He's so comedic that kind of threw me for a little bit there. It's like, oh, he's a regular in this. But Michael Emerson from Lost and the Saw movies, he is so creepy in it, as he always is creepy. I'm into it. I'm actually going to really continue with that. Now, Prodigal Son, I know you liked it, Fum, and you even texted us saying episode 2 was good.
It gets so good.
Okay, I'll check it out. But Prodigal Son, even though it is visually beautiful, probably the most beautifully shot broadcast show on TV, Okay. Right? When you don't count cable and streaming. I mean, beautifully shot. A little creepy, but something about it I was hoping I would like it.
Is it too broadcast for you?
No, it's too maybe over the top. Like, what's her name from Scandal? I'm like, first of all, you are not his mom. You are way too beautiful and young to be a 30-year-old man's mom.
Bellamy Young? Oh, she does Bellamy. Such a good job.
Well, and that's the thing.
I say stick with it. I honestly, okay. It's my new favorite show. Like, wow. I don't really care for anything else that I've seen.
Yeah,
to be completely honest, except
this
for
fall,
that one.
Yes, this fall is rough. Now, is episode 2 like a different case? Is it like a procedural
that
way?
Yeah, it's a different case, absolutely. Okay. I will say that the one thing I don't like about Prodigal Son is that when you say serial killer to me, I'm expecting people who are prolific serial killers. Like, they have gone and murdered 10, 15, 20
right.
people. Like,
right.
we are really getting into the minds of someone who has taken life after life after life after life.
Yeah.
It is procedural in the way that a lot of the three people we've met so far haven't done that, so that does bother me a little bit.
I see.
More so they've committed a crime here or there, and then it's like, this is a serial killer. It's like, well, it's not really a serial killer. It's just a killer. It's just a murderer.
I see what you mean. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't love that, but it is still really well, and I think that Michael Sheen does such a good job.
He's very good.
I'm intrigued by him. Mm-hmm. And there's something that happens in the episode. Well, I had a feeling from the first episode that not all was as it seemed.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there's something that happens in episode 3 where I was like, oh, this is interesting. Where is this going?
Oh, well, shit. Okay, I'll obviously have to watch, because I do like that he is a little unhinged. That he, the son, you know... First episode, I won't say it in case anyone hasn't watched, but, you know, there's something to do with a hand. And I was like, oh, shit, that is... So he walks that fine line of he's a good guy, but he has these weird, dark things that maybe he's gotten from his dad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted to like it more, but okay, I'm definitely going to... I'll check it out more, but either way, I'm happy to see these, you know, pretty great, well-made, scary shows on broadcast, because I agree, they were really the only interesting things out there, so... Had to watch and share, but anyway.
Yeah. We'll have to keep updating everyone on what we think of them. Mm-hmm. But let's get into our list.
Yeah.
Mark, I mean, it's really just...
Cricket.
You go.
It's just me. Hi.
Go for it.
Sorry, Tom. You're going to have to wait. I'm only doing one this week. My only item is a good one, everyone. Listen up, gather around. So this is a show, I'm stealing Fumi's Netflix Queen title episode. Because is what you're talking about Fumi on Netflix or no? You're talking about something else, right?
No, it's not on Netflix, actually.
Okay. All right. So I am stealing the title for this week. So everyone, there is a show that it came out a few weeks ago, and I've been hearing, you know, it's really great. It's really scary. It's like really well done, blah, blah, blah. Netflix has a hit on their hands. So I decided to check it out. And it is the series Marianne. Marianne, it's a French series, so it does have subtitles. Get used to it, because I actually quite like it. Greg.
Ooh, okay.
Did you watch this, Foom? Have you heard about it?
I haven't watched it, but honestly, I have to tell you, I thought it was so intriguing from the trailer. I thought it looked really good.
Okay.
And then I found out it was French, and I was like, ooh, I don't know about this.
Now, that's so funny, because I did not watch the trailer at all. I just saw it on, like, lists and articles, and I was like, I keep hearing about this Marianne show. But,
yeah.
And I know what you mean. I, too, was also like, oh, French... Like, I gotta read, but this show, guys, is so, it's actually, I could understand if it's a little overwhelming for some people, because they pack so much in. I've only watched the first episode. There are 8 episodes total in season 1. I've only watched the first hour, but they pack so much in that you quickly forget that you're even reading. You are in it, and it throws you. So let me tell you a little bit about it. So again, it's a French series, and so it just came out September 13th. So it's a new series on Netflix, perfect for this Halloween season, everybody. So it follows Emma Larsamen, who is a very popular, beloved horror author. And she's only around 30. She said she's been writing this series of books for 10 years. And they are a crime series based on a character that she created. I think created, the character's name is Lizzie. But the bad... The villain's name is Marianne, and Marianne is a witch. She's like a witch spirit that possesses people, and she can take any form, and she can lie. She can lie about everything but her name.
Oh, if you ask her,
yes, if you ask the person what their name is, Marianne, the spirit of Marianne, cannot lie about the name. So that's kind of this little mythology that this that this author Emma has created. She's written, let's say, I'm not sure the exact number, but maybe like 5 books in 10 years. So okay. She's super successful. It opens with her doing kind of a reading and a Q&A, but after 10 years of doing it, she's over it. She doesn't want to write this anymore. She's done. She actually has stopped having nightmares, and nightmares would sort of fuel her stories. And so she's like, I want to write something totally different. I'm done with horror. And so we meet her assistant, her like agent's assistant, this cute girl named Camille. And basically, right from the get-go, guys, we see, I want to be careful not to give too much away, but someone that Emma knows from her past is having crazy things happening to her and her family. And apparently it is the spirit of Marianne that is doing it. Now, keep in mind, Marianne, within this world of the show, Marianne is not a real character or anything. That is a fictional. It's almost like we're in the world of Scream and they're watching Stab. And so those characters are just like, that's a movie. So in this world, the characters are like, oh, yeah, these are books. This is all fictional. But what happens when the books are coming to life? Right. Mm. So scary things. I was pretty freaked. I think it's pretty well done. It's very, the editing is crazy. Beautiful
shots.
How
many episodes, Mark?
It's 8 episodes total. So I've only seen the first one, but it packs so much in. You follow Emma and Camille to the town where she grew up, in this coastal French town, to try to figure out what's going on with people of her past. And they set up some open doors. There are some things that are mentioned that I'm like, what's that about? So we'll learn more. But I think it's pretty interesting, and it's darkly funny. Some of it you will laugh at, and I think you're supposed to laugh at it because it is dark, but it's so fast and comedic. Those French really have a weird, sick, twisted sense of humor. So I recommend it. I say add Marianne to your list. You'll be freaked. You'll be entertained. I'm very intrigued where this will go. I think it's pretty interesting. It's all about the things we create coming to life and how do we close that off, right?
Well,
so that's what I got.
I have to say, I'm surprised. I mean, I don't know. French programming is so tough for me, but I'm going to take your word for it and I'm going to check it out.
French programming can be tough, but keep in mind, the French do know how to make good horror. There are some good horror films throughout the years that the French don't hold back. And this just the first episode alone, there's so much crazy shit that they are not holding back. You will not be bored. You might, I could understand if you can't really keep up with the subtitles, if you're like, whoa, but you're not going to be bored. There's some really good performances too. There's a woman that is going for it in this show. So check it out.
All right. Well, that's Mark's Marianne. Tom is going to go next, and he's got something we're actually both really excited about listening to what he has
Tom.
To say.
Tom's in a remote location. What do you have for us, Tom?
Hey, guys, it's Tom here. I was unable to get on the live broadcast tonight because I have a work conflict, but I just thought I would take a few moments to tell you about The Joker, because it is such a big movie and such an important movie right now. It broke box office records last weekend when it opened, I believe, 96 or 97 million, highest gross opening weekend of all time for October. So it's doing some big things. There's been a lot of buzz about it. It won the Golden Lion at the Venice Film Festival. So people kind of knew that it was going to be big. I bet some people were surprised at just how big it really was, though. Anyway, I'm going to talk about that because that is my list item. And I am going to say Joker is an add this to your list. It is very, very good and it lives up to the hype. Now, let me just preface this by saying that I am not in any way, shape, or form a comic book fan or a comic book movie fan. You guys should know that by now. But Joker doesn't feel that way at all. You don't need to know anything about the Joker's backstory. You don't have to have read any of the comics. You don't have to even have seen any of the previous movies in which he's been in with Batman. You kind of just go in. You could go in blind because it's really its own standalone story. Joaquin Phoenix plays a man who is just been beaten down his whole life. He's in a job that he doesn't want to be in. He dresses as a clown and stands outside. You know how those stores will hire people to stand outside and flip the signs in front of there that say sale today or everything must go. He does that kind of thing. He dresses as a clown and goes and visits some people in a hospital sometimes. Lives at home with his mom, doesn't have any girlfriend, never been with a girlfriend, never been married, kind of a loner. He's dying to be a comedian, but unfortunately he's just not funny. Whenever he has some free time and free money, he goes and watches stand-up comedy at comedy shows in the city and tries to learn from it, but it never really goes anywhere. So basically his life just freaking sucks. And he reaches a breaking point. And that's when he becomes the character of the Joker. And I don't want to give anything else away because there are some pretty good surprises in that movie. And we're not about to spoil that for you. But I just think it was all around a good movie. Yes, it's dark. Yes, it's violent. No, it's not as violent as everybody said. There certainly have been worse things on film and TV that we've seen in the past decade or so, if you will. Yes, the acting is absolutely incredible. Robert De Niro also turns in a very good supporting role in addition to Joaquin. But most, what resonated most with me about the movie is the message. To me, Joker is a very, very stark warning to society that if we don't regain compassion for one another and if we don't regain empathy, that this is the kind of thing our world is going to face, right? Everybody's going to have their breaking point, and we're going to have a lot of this hate and anger kind of boil over in society. And a lot of people argue that we're getting very close to that boiling point, but that's neither here nor there. So that's Joker in a nutshell. The cinematography is amazing. It's a tight script. Go see it. I can't say enough good things about it. And like I said, for me to enjoy this movie, not being a comic book movie fan or not really knowing anything about the Joker other than what we've seen, I was thoroughly entertained. And I think it's an important film. So that's the Joker.
All right. Well, are you going to see Joker? What do you think? Are you planning on seeing it, Mark?
Oh, I definitely want to see it. I'm not sure when. I know it was like number one, of course, but what I think now biggest, right? Biggest October opening. I know Tom had mentioned before this episode, he had mentioned to me over the weekend that he saw it and like Joaquin is definitely going to get a nom. So I'm intrigued. You're going to see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
sure, I feel like
this is you all over.
I am
going
to see it. Yeah. I don't know. It's really dark, but we'll see. But anyway, on my list I actually am coming full circle because this time last year I picked Into the Dark.
From
Hulu, The Body. Uh-huh. And as we know, it was from Blumhouse and they did a horror movie once every month. And so the first season kind of ended. And so season two picked up for October. And unbeknownst to me, I was flipping through Hulu and I saw a film called Uncanny Annie.
Oh, and so that's part of Into the Dark?
And so that kicks off season two of Into the Dark. I know, right?
How funny.
I did not realize it, but I was intrigued. Like, okay, so a really interesting premise. Basically think horror Jumanji.
Yeah.
You have a bunch of friends who are hanging out for Halloween. They want to do something low-key because they have a friend who has died or disappeared. And they find a bunch of games and they play one called Uncanny Annie.
I love the sound of it. Okay.
Y'all.
Yeah.
You can go ahead and skip that shit. Okay. Oh my God.
Boom.
I know.
You were really leading me on. I thought you were about to say, y'all, this is the must see of the year. Okay, never mind.
Amazing premise, execution, wah, 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 wah. Wow.
And I remember you did not like The Body. Did you ever watch any other episodes?
I actually have watched quite a few of the Into the Dark ones, and they have had some good ones, but a majority not so good.
Yeah, what's with that?
I don't know, Blumhouse. I don't know. And we love you so much. So Uncanny Annie basically stars a bunch of unknowns, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's really no one in here that anybody is familiar with. There's a man, Dylan Arnold, Adeline Kane, Georgie Flores, Jacques Coleman, Evan Bittencourt. These are all unknown young kids who are in this movie. They're a group of friends. Like I said, it's directed by Paul Davis, who actually did The Body, who Into the Dark's first kickoff of this. So maybe that should have been a sign. I don't know. But like I said, premise was so good. And I think I was really excited for this. In my mind, it was hyped up. And I was like, oh my God, what a great concept.
Right.
Super, super smart. But every time there was supposed to be a scare, I was left like, you've got to be kidding me.
Really? Very anticlimactic?
Very.
Oh, God.
And I'll just give this one thing away. It starts off with a girl having to go in a bathroom. And you know how you go in the bathroom, you turn off the light, and you say Bloody Mary three times.
Okay,
and it's supposed
yeah.
to be, like, mm-hmm. super scary. So they do something similar to this that conjures Annie, right?
Oh.
And Annie wants to play. She wants to play, but her games are sick and twisted. The idea behind it is so smart and so good, and there were so many opportunities where it could make you quivering and so scared watching this at home on the couch, but it just doesn't. I mean, the ghosts and the scares are so lame.
Really?
It's like, I wish they had watched, like, the Conjuring Universe movies
yeah.
and taken, like, some of the ghost ideas from that
right.
and tried to formulate what they could have done with this movie. It was just so stupid.
So what is it, like, a cursed game? It's like a game where once you play it, you're unleashing.
Once you play the game, you unleash it, and you have to finish playing the game within a certain amount of time. Oh. Otherwise, whatever happens, you know.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot
forever.
Of fun. But yeah, it's just not.
Right?
You don't care about
the
anyone.
The execution is so. I mean, you don't care about any of the characters. The first person to die, you're just like, well. I mean, you showed it already in her premonition, and then she didn't even do anything about it, and it's not even shocking the way he dies, so that's lame. You basically, you blew the lid before you needed to.
Right, right.
And then, you know, the following things that happen, you're like, really? Like, this is what it's just, it's so disappointing.
Wow.
It's disappointing.
Okay.
And I had high hopes.
And it's funny, because I've heard very mixed things about the show. I know you, of course, didn't like it. Other people didn't like it, but then other people... like it, but I don't trust them. They're not diehard.
Have you not watched any of the films?
You know what's funny? I haven't watched any. And some I was really intrigued by. There was one I really wanted to see. Did you see the School Spirits one or something?
I did not see that one.
There was like some school thing. It was in the summer. That looked kind of good.
I did not.
I thought the Treehouse one looked good, but then that got terrible reviews. Like a lot of these are not reviewed well. So...
I'm telling you, there's definitely a lot more no's than there are yeses.
Yeah, it's weird. All right, maybe I'll check, because this one sounds interesting. I do want to check it out.
Like, Mark, this would be right up your alley.
Yeah.
You would have loved it.
Yeah.
You would have loved the idea behind it, and then you would have just been like,
what the fuck?
Really? Yeah.
And they're all just like an hour, right? Or are they longer than an hour?
No,
right?
They're movies.
Wow.
Even movies. They're
wow.
all movies.
Ugh. Mm-hmm.
They're all self-contained movies.
Wow.
And, I will say that a couple of the ones that I liked in the first season of this was We All Destroy, which was a really interesting one, which was like a mom keeps cloning this woman so that her serial killer son can keep killing her.
Oh, that sounds very interesting. That was like the Mother's Day episode,
yes.
I think, right? Yeah, I remember the images, like the poster looked very interesting. Okay, that's good to know.
That one was a good one. So if you're going to watch any of them, definitely watch that one. And then you should also watch... I guess that might be the only other one. The one I was thinking about isn't... Down.
Down?
Down is a good one, too.
Which one is that? When did that come out? Do you know
which
one?
It came out around Valentine's Day.
Okay. So it's like a...
And it stars Natalie Martinez,
okay.
who you'll know her face when you see her.
Okay.
And she plays this woman who works in a building, and she gets stuck in an elevator with this man, and all is not what it seems to be. That one was a good one, too.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, there was one that was like something... like it looked like it was like an April Fool's one that looked kind of fun, like at a motel, but... I could see that one going south as well, like the others. Yeah. Wow. All right.
So we had Marianne, which is an ad. We had Joker, which is an ad, and we had Uncanny Annie, which is a skip that shit. Like, honestly, people don't even bother.
Wow, so sad. Oof, okay.
And now we're going to get into an interview with Wyatt Smith, who is the editor for Harriet. So have a listen, ladies and gentlemen.
So I am on the phone with Wyatt Smith, and he is the editor on Harriet. Wyatt, Harriet is getting quite the buzz out of Toronto. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hit this award season. So you are quite an accomplished editor, having worked on films such as Pirates of the Caribbean, Thor the Dark World, Mary Poppins Returns, Into the Woods. I could go on and on. Tell us a little bit about your background and what types of education and training led you to where you are today.
Well, I actually came up in the music business, and I had a kind of a choice to go into kind of audio production or to go into TV production based on music. And I kind of went with the latter, and I fell in love with editing right away when I realized you could tell the story of a concert, you know, just in terms of even a song, which in a weird way is actually a lot like scene work. And, you know, there's a story being told, and you're kind of guiding an audience through the music, through the lyrics. And I worked at that for a very long time. And then Rob Marshall, who had directed Chicago at that point and Memoirs of a Geisha, we worked together on a music special for Tony Bennett, and we got on really well. And he said, hey, next film I make, I'll bring you along. And he gave me my break then into movies, along with Claire Simpson, who I co-edited the film with.
Wow. So it kind of was serendipitous, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I can't say enough. You know, you just work as hard as you can, and hopefully opportunity knocks. And I was very lucky.
And I guess that music connection, I'm looking at your eyes. Right now, I guess it makes sense why you worked on One Direction's documentary.
Yes, that's true. I worked on the concerts section of that. Yeah,
was that fun?
Oh, it was a great time. You know, I miss working on music all day. At the same time, I've worked on many musical features, which is, you know, it's a slightly different creature. But I love listening to music all day.
Great. And as an editor, how involved are you during pre-production and the production phases of a film?
Well, pre-production, my role is ever changing. I mean, every film is different. On the big visual effects heavy films, like say the Marvel films, like Doctor Strange, or the Rise of an Empire, the second 300 film, I started about 4 to 6 weeks full time before filming starts, and a lot of that is, you know, kind of quickly as possible scrambling and putting an editor's story perspective on all of the pre-visualization that's been going on at that point for at least half a year. In the case of the film I'm on right now, which will be Disney's The Little Mermaid, I'm there from day one of pre-production, working with the storyboard artists and, of course, the director, creating animatics, moving that into previs, and kind of shepherding the edit all along until we actually get up to filming and helping figure out how we actually make half a movie underwater. Well, you're gonna have to hold your breath. It's gonna be a while.
Yeah, I know James Wan had, you know, some difficulties with that when he was doing Aquaman, but I think in general it turned out okay.
Yeah, well, certainly very entertaining. I mean, we're going to aim to be a little more photoreal than that, no disrespect to anybody.
Sure,
but,
sure.
It is a challenge, but it's a fun one. So in this case, pre-production very early. As far as filming goes, though, I'm always there through filming, putting the material together as it's shot, flagging anything to the director that might not seem right or any questions, because it's always easier to get that material while you have your actors in your sets than, you know, 6-8 months later when you realize, you know, a very quick little pickup shot could have fixed a lot of things. So there's a lot of interaction with set during shooting. In the case of Harriet, which was it's a smaller budget film, and they were mostly shooting a lot of nights in the woods in Virginia, it didn't really make sense for me to be on location. That said, about 2 or 3 weeks in, I asked if I could at least come down to Virginia for a few days to get to meet Casey in person. We'd only ever Skyped. And I have to say that spending 4 days with her, seeing how she works with her actors, seeing how she works with her crew, and just our general conversation, showing her some early cuts, I came back to New York. I threw out everything I had done. I started over, and the work came so much easier because I'd had that interaction with her.
And what do you think was the biggest challenge in editing Harriet?
Well, a lot of it is the tone of the film is hard because we didn't want to make, and this was Casey's vision all along, she wasn't trying to make a film with all the tropes of slavery that we're used to. Those films have been done, and they've been done very well. The thing about Harriet's story is she's incredibly inspirational. And to try to toe that line where we're not just showing whippings and hangings and showing more the decimation of her family, which is very relevant to our times today when you see what's happening in the U.S., as well as, you know, trying to leave the film on an uplifting note, which is challenging when you're basically covering a period that ends, you know, it's a 10-year period that the film spans, ending right at the beginning of the Civil War. So it's hard to get a good feeling out of that. But we thought that that was going to be really important, especially because we were trying to make a film that's more accessible to kids as well, that they're not just going to be, you know, that it's got tough stuff in it, but you're learning so much about this incredible woman who really has not had her time in the spotlight 100 years after her death. So getting that tone right and earning it by the end of the film was a challenge.
Sure.
That, and when you see the film, there's some visual language to, you know, there was kind of a Joan of Arc element to Harriet in terms of her kind of communication with God or her communication with her instinct, and how to create that as a narrative device is, you know, that's always a challenge. And we spent a lot of time working on that.
Why do you think it took so long to get such a high profile version of Harriet Tubman's story on the big screen?
I really wish I had an easy answer for that question.
Me too.
all that matters is that it is happening. And the fact is this woman lived to be 91 years old, and there was very little moment in her life that she was not dedicating to, people in need, as well as just being such a great, opponent of slavery. But the fact is you could make easily 10 more movies about Harriet Tubman. In fact, even our film,
miniseries too.
Yeah, I mean, even in our film, I mean, this will not spoil anything, but obviously, it opens right when she's faced with having to flee, and run for her life, essentially, and run for her freedom. That journey alone could be its own film.
Right. You
know? But we have further to go. So, I mean, it feels like a great introduction to her story, and you really, it's like her origin story in a way, so you kind of now want to, you know, I hope that people take the chance now to dive into all the other chapters of her life.
All right, and finally, this is a podcast where we tell listeners what TV or movies they should have on their list. So, what's on your list?
Oh, boy. in terms of things I want to see, there's so much I want to see, but it hasn't come out yet. I'm dying to see Joker. At the same time, I've also, now that I'm, you know, stranded in London for a while, I have a lot of catching up to do. I just started watching Fleabag. I think it's about as brilliant as anything I've ever seen.
Yes, one of our co-hosts raved about it about 2 weeks ago. She absolutely cannot say enough about it.
And in an amazing way, I'm actually really happy that I've waited till I've been back in London to watch it, because it, you know, it is so rooted here.
Right.
But yeah, it's a long list. I actually, you know, I keep a running list of everything I want to see, and I've still got about 40, 50 movies down to come out this year that I want to see, and I'll make sure I see them.
All right. Well, thank you for your time, Wyatt. This is
great. You got it. Thank you, Tom.
All right. That was Tom, yes, and Wyatt Smith. I hope you guys are all going to check out Harriet when it comes out nationwide November 1st, because I know I am. I'm actually really excited for this.
Oh, yeah. It looks great. I think it's going to be a tearjerker, I'm sure. And it looks exciting, too.
Yeah, so, it really does. Yeah.
And Wyatt Smith, as you heard, has done big stuff, guys.
Yeah.
So. Very cool. This is, thank you, Wyatt, for
absolutely, thank you,
coming on our little old
thank
podcast.
Thank you, Wyatt, so much. And that is our show for today. We want to thank all of you guys for listening, for supporting us. We really, really appreciate it. Thank you for following our social media. Drop us some reviews. Let us know what you're thinking about with what we're talking about. If you have some things that suggestions you'd like us to mention, drop a line, let us know. And aside from that, we will see you next week with our spooky list.
Yes, 'tis the season for some spookiness. Ooh. Bye.
Bye.